VentureCast. Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Who died in 1971. Fashion. Black dress.
Halston?
Perfume.
Estee Lauder.
No, a black dress.
Just help us.
Black dress. Oh, come on. Every woman has a black dress because of this woman.
Audrey Hepburn.
Coco Chanel.
Okay.
Very rough. Nice.
That was rough. Okay. Second person.
Who died this bit?
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, how are you today? Oh my gosh, This is our first early morning recording, correct? Ben, do you have a cup of coffee, anything?
Oh, dude, I've already had two cortados. I'm ready to roll.
Okay, Jeff Simon's rolling out of bed in Berkeley. Anything in your system?
Nothing. I woke up 17 minutes ago, and it was 17 minutes too early.
I'm glad you...
It is 7 a.m. in California. Dear listeners,
I'm glad you got all your prep done for the podcast last night. So you're still in Berkeley. I'm in Somerville. Ben, to the islands you've gone?
That's right. Beautiful Nantucket, Massachusetts, here with my family, the extended Barton clan.
Well, I'll tell you, listeners, those of you who are 50 years or older, we are in the midst of bringing children to colleges to visit. This is something that 50-year-olds, white otherwise, male otherwise, have done. Jeff, you and Will are about to go on the road?
Yeah, we'll probably be in Pennsylvania the next time we record one of these. So
wow.
It should be fun.
Well, I'm out of questions to ask admissions people.
What is the best question you asked? And what is the question you wish you had left in your pocket? So far, since I'm about to make all the same mistakes.
For some reason, we keep asking, well, what's the drinking culture like? And it's a silly question because every college is going to have a drinking and drug culture, correct? Did Haverford?
Even nerdy little Haverford had the occasional indulgence, yes.
And so it's much more important, like, for the kid to figure out how to navigate it rather than like, oh no, we do not drink at school X.
Or... Any school that says there's no drinking is definitely full of sociopaths, wouldn't you say?
Right.
Like, yeah, okay.
But also I have my actual advice on this.
Uh-huh.
Is I did the college tours and not India, partially because she was running for mayor and was busy, but partially because she is an inveterate and really pretty good question asker.
Oh.
And the girls and I decided that it was better to go with the no question asker.
Right.
So if anybody, like if the girls had a question, Dolly would sometimes ask a question. But I mean, otherwise we just was like passively received
just
the information.
Along. Yep.
Which is weirdly informative. Because like they pick and choose what they tell you. And like you go, like we visited mostly small liberal arts colleges with both Dahlia and Georgia. Although Dolly, a couple of bigger schools, it was super funny. It's like how they choose to present themselves. You're visiting identical places in slightly different locations.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And yet the presentation style is radically different.
Right.
Super different. And some of that is chance. Like if your tour guide is a dud, then you're just like, wow, that I hated that
school. That school.
But sometimes you get an amazing tour guide and you'll be like, wow,
what a school.
Surely yeah. everyone is just like that. That's yeah. the yeah. awesome.
Yeah. Oh, you have a community here? Oh, you practice social justice? Like, I mean, it's amazing how they're all the same. And that's what I tell my kid. Like, you're going to meet great people. You're going to learn a lot of things. It doesn't matter where you go to school.
And apparently you're not going to do a lot of drinking.
Yeah, clearly.
Wait, are you asking because you're anti-drinking or pro-drinking?
I really don't know.
First of all, Timmy, are you like in the, there's the whole group and they've just done their presentation. Like, did anybody have a question? You raise your hand. And you're like, where do you get down? Where do you partake? Hey, I'm going to be in town Friday night. Hell, is there a dorm party I should know about?
You know what they called me in college? Yeah, I went to the University of Dayton, Ben Barton. And that I was struck by the drinking culture, literally. Beer can right off the head. Hey, at Tim's Bar in Dayton, Ohio, they served beer for $11.50, filled up a bucket, the kind of bucket you would wash your car with. And they would bring the bucket to your table and throw like six plastic cups in it. And then you and your buddies would just go whoop, whoop, whoop. It's good times. Dayton, Ohio.
Are you sure it's actually called Tim's Bar or were you just so drunk?
Like, this is my bar.
Like, it's Tim's bar though.
Okay, let's move on. This is 1971. Welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys here on the Music City Drive-In Podcast Network. Go to musiccitydrivein.com to get all your fix for podcasts, sports, celebrities, the whole shebang. Let's go. We got the Grammy winner. This is the best album of 1971. Jeff Simons, do you have beef with this?
Nope.
All right, hit it.
It's a good record. And this is my favorite song from it.
It's the Grammy winner.
Tapestry by Carole King.
King, pretty song.
Oh, one of the all-time. I mean, I can't tell you how beautiful I think that song is. Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow is one of the 20 prettiest things I've ever heard in my life. Wow. Just like anybody who wrote that deserves at least a few minutes of recognition. It's like the Danny Boy of rock and roll. Just an absolutely perfect, beautiful piece of writing. I love that song. I love every version of it I've ever heard.
And this is Tapestry, that's the record?
This yeah. is Tapestry, yeah. So Carole King is a songwriter for the Brill Building, which is in what was called Tin Pan Alley in New York City, where Woo! Lots of hit songs were generated. And after writing all of these incredible hit songs for other artists, she decided to make her own version of these songs and expected it to sell like 5,000 copies, like just pulled a bunch of favors and strings to put out her own version. And it was a shocking, runaway, gargantuan monster hit. It's one of the all-time best-selling records ever.
It's really great.
And these are all songs that are made famous by other artists first that she reclaims on this record.
Who sang Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
The Shirelles. The Shirelles,
yeah.
And, you know, You've Got a Friend is on here, Way Over Yonder.
Natural
It's Too Late.
Woman.
So Far Away, I Feel the Earth Move. Like, it's just one, you know, it's a lifetime of great writing turned into, and I believe she wrote most of these with her then ex-husband, like Gary Goffin. So it's also reclamation, like they had split up, I believe, and she was kind of, it's a record that mourns the end of that relationship by reclaiming those songs for herself.
Oh.
But yeah, it's good stuff. It's funny, like there's lots of Carole King records through the 70s and none of the rest of them.
No.
Stick out to me, but it's because, you know, you spend a whole life writing the first record and then 6 months writing the second record. So,
you know, I remember a few years ago we drove to Canada, and in between listening to Harry Potter, I would play that album for the kids, and they liked it. They thought it was a good album. So that's a win. Let's go.
I don't like it. I don't care for it. I never liked Carole King. I like. I just don't like it.
What's not to like about this? There's nothing wrong with that.
I hate the earth moves under my feet. I don't like that version of the song. I still like it. There's something that bugs me.
You Got a Friend?
What bugs you about it is it's music to make macrame potholders to.
Right.
I mean, that's so 70s.
You. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like you can hear people passing around a casserole of or organic fava beans while this is in the background. Like it is of its moment for sure, but it's, I mean,
well,
of those kinds of things, like I think it's, I totally can give it a pass.
Ben will just have to burn his hands as he takes the pot out because he will not have any potholders. Events of the year 1971, Idi Amin rises to power, cigarette ads are banned from television, All in the Family debuts, Starbucks is founded in Seattle, an awful...
Not by the guy who bought it, right?
This not is- right. Howard Schultz is going to buy it in the 80s and it'll become what we know it as now.
Yeah.
Awful, awful football match disaster in Scotland. The Celtics versus Rangers kills 66 people, like some sort of stairway crush. 66
it's the first
people.
Of those, right? This is the one that nobody knows about because it wasn't on TV, but it's like Hillsborough and
it's going to be on TV. Yeah. In 1971, Ivan Koloff defeats Bruno Sammartino, ending a nearly 8-year reign for Sammartino as world wrestling champion. That's just a little before our time. You know, we would always hear about Bruno Sammartino, but we wouldn't really know him. Who's the wrestler from your childhood who sticks out most in your mind, whether he's champion or not?
Wrestling quiz?
Andre the Giant, I guess, from my childhood. I mean, we were teenagers when that blew up.
Yeah.
But I never watched it. I was never into it.
Oh, I was into it for sure. I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
I was too busy making macrame potholders.
Ric Flair was great. I was a huge Ric Flair guy. And so the fact that Ric Flair has been reborn as a rat magnet. Just, and if you're a grown up and don't know what I'm talking about, just search Ric Flair alligator shoes and Ric Flair losing his mind about how awesome he is. And it's like a rap magnet. Like they love it. They name drop Ric Flair all the time.
That's hilarious. I'm going to go with the Von Erichs. Anyone watch the Von Erichs? No?
The Von Trapps. They are also a rep.
Kerry Von Erich, Kevin Von Erich, David Von Erich. I like the guy with bare feet. He would go out there with bare feet. He was an incredible athlete. All right, I'll send you all some footage.
Very nice. Yeah, wrestling. I don't know why. It never clicked with me.
Oh my gosh, you're crazy. All right, which concert would you most like to have seen? There are four concerts from 1971 I'm going to throw at you. Are you ready? Now think about your answer carefully. There's a Frank Zappa concert in Montreux, Switzerland, which is very famous.
No thanks.
The concert for Bangladesh. I'm gonna pick the show that they recorded, the Allman Brothers play the Fillmore East. I know they played there a ton, but let's go with the one they recorded. And then Pink Floyd live at Pompeii. Which one are you going to go to, Ben Barton?
I'm going to go to the concert that's my album choice for the year.
So we can't talk. So you really love Pink Floyd at Pompeii, huh? That's awesome.
Yeah, that one, I mean, I guess, like, honestly, I guess I would go to Bangladesh because there would be something there I might kind of like, but the rest are hard notes. Exclamation point notes.
So Jeff Simons, what do you think?
The Zappa one, literally, he would come on and he'd start playing and I would just go to the bathroom. And that would be it.
Well, you wouldn't because
of the building.
You wouldn't because the building caught on fire.
Yeah.
That's the smoke on the water show where everybody almost died.
Better yet. Honestly, when the fire started, I would be like, well, surely I'll die soon and this experience will end.
Just bring it. Bring
the
fire.
I would go see The Who at the Cow Palace in San Francisco on the next to last night of The Who's Next Tour. I would trade my tickets with somebody.
You'd trade all four of those opportunities.
But
I'd go
I'd go see the Allman Brothers.
Okay. Sure. How many artists play the concert for Bangladesh?
It's like a dozen, right?
Is it?
I mean, okay. Dylan's there and Ravi Shankar and George and yeah. Have you ever listened to the concert for Bangladesh? It's pretty sloppy.
I haven't, no.
I mean, it's listenable, but it's definitely like.
It's listenable in spots. There's spots where it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right.
That's one of the easiest records to find in a used record store, too. It's in a brown box. The box is always broken. There's always like one of the three records missing or the poster. But like they made a bunch of those records.
Yeah.
And then people were like, I'm good, and returned them very quickly.
So. All right. Other events of 71. Ed Sullivan goes off the air. What a career he had, especially in terms of music and introducing musical artists. Pentagon Papers are published. We've got a Supreme Court case for Ben Barton. Swan v. Charlotte Mecklenburg Board of Education. It's not about contracts.
Is that the busing case?
The Supreme Court says that busing is allowed to be used to achieve racial desegregation. It is okay. Thumbs up. I hope it goes well in Boston when they have that.
That's one of the all-time photos, man, with that protester and the flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a killer photo. All right. As I was researching 1971, there's this mention on Wikipedia of Reggie Jackson's home run in the All-Star game. And I'm like, oh, big deal. Reggie Jackson hit a home run. But it talks about it going off the lights at Detroit's Tiger Stadium.
Right.
And I'm like, Tiger Stadium.
Yeah.
So I clicked on it. You guys got to YouTube this. It's just, he tattoos this ball. It doesn't go like down the line. It's right center over the roof, hits the lights. That guy could hit a ball.
Yep.
That's amazing. I went to a couple games at Old Tiger Stadium when I was in law school, and that's unimaginable.
Cecil Fielder, remember when Cecil Fielder did it? And he did the same thing at the height of his close your eyes and swing as hard as you can baseball career. And as soon as he did it, people were bringing up that home run. And I actually went to a game there with you, Ben, at Old Tiger Stadium.
Nice.
Gigantic and triple deck in the outfield.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a huge play.
So check out Reggie Jackson's all-star home run from 71. Speaking of home runs, let's talk about the best-selling album of the year. Released in 1971, the best-selling album in 1971. I can't wait to hear which song Jeff picks. Go.
Oh, which song? I was going to do the I'll do the one that annoys me the most. How about that?
Okay. Awesome.
All right. That's great. And then we'll talk about the one that everybody knows, but this one just drives me crazy. Ready?
It's the number one album.
Jesus Christ Superstar by the original studio cast.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. 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 What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
What should you want to know? Don't you mind about the future? Don't you try to think ahead? Save tomorrow for tomorrow. Think about today instead. Oh yeah. I could give you facts and figures.
How can you not like that song? That's the whole ensemble cast on the stage boogieing down.
What the hell is that? What is that?
It's Jesus Christ Superstar.
Are you serious? That song is in that dumb show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So many.
Amazing. And that was the best-selling record of the year?
Best-selling record of 1971.
America has the worst taste. That is just brutal. And also, by the way, I can tell you what the fuss is. Freaking 1971. The oil embargo. We're in Vietnam. The world's falling apart. Having it, like, throwing a keyboard solo on top of it, just...
Yeah. Yeah. That's a heck of a keyboard solo.
Oh, man. And this is this is the record that foists Andrew Lloyd Webber on us for the next three decades, too, right? Like, right. He and Tim Rice have carte blanche after this to make Starlight Express and all the other...
Cats.
Well, I know I was going to save Cats for later.
So Hair comes first... kind of breaks the mold of what a musical is, and then Jesus Christ Superstar.
Did you guys see this movie when you were young? Did you guys?
I did, yes.
It freaked me out.
Yes.
It's all like close camera. I got to be honest, like the sound and filming style of this movie and early porn are the same.
Yes.
Like this has porn music sound.
I don't know.
And it's like,
you're
really close to the faces and like they're moving around and it's grainy. And like, I just found this movie deeply troubling. I came across it at age like 4 or 5 on television and just like, what am I looking at?
It's funny you say that because two other movies come out in 71 that had profound impact on me as a child. Willy Wonka freaked me out. And then I was visiting relatives in Rochester and they had me in the TV room on a couch and I'm like 9 years old and they had HBO and I'm like, oh, what's on? I watched A Clockwork Orange at like 9.
Oh, that'll really
burn you. Bad. That was bad, man.
I actually don't know if I've made it all the way through A Clockwork Orange in one sitting.
Like, George and I just rewatched it. It's on the AFI Top 100. So yeah. we watch it. And it was a puzzling rewatch. It, on the one hand, it's a powerful work of art because I'm not going to forget it. I've seen it twice now, or maybe 3 times. But I mean, George is like, oh, that's burned on my brain. But it's a horrible, grueling, miserable experience.
Yeah, and I've never made it all the way through because of that. Yeah. Like, there's just like, I don't think I saw it until the first time I tried, I was a junior in high school. And I couldn't make it. And then I tried again when I was like 25 or 26. And I don't think I've even tried to watch it since.
I think
Jeff
you'll be fine.
Jeff will know this. We'll remember this. There's a Rolling Stones album that has that weird mumbling on the back. It's written by Andrew Luke Oldham. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's got like a, ooh, me droogies and stuff. And so I saw it in high school because I was so into the Rolling Stones. I was like, oh, if this guy likes it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, Let's give a soundbite to Ben Barton of the album from 1971 that is the all-time bestseller.
Oh, okay.
Just a little riff.
Well, I don't know. It's so obscure. I don't know if he'll be able to pick it up. But
you got to name it as quickly as possible, Ben Barton.
He'll be okay. Hold on. I got the sound down on the second. Ready? I'll give you 1 second.
Ah! Led Zeppelin 4. Very nice.
Excellent. And they do, in fact, debut Stairway to Heaven in concert before the album was released.
You know, I have a bootleg from... I have a bootleg of Zeppelin from 71 where Stairway to Heaven's in the middle of the set because nobody knows it. Uh-huh. So, like, it's funny because you're like... You know, they play four or five songs and everybody knows them. They're freaking out. And then they play Stairway. And at the end, people are like, well, that was long. You can tell they're like, that's pretty good. But wow, that was like 11 minutes. And then a year later, it's the last song and everyone's freaking out. But it is funny to hear. Like, I mean, the same is true of Won't Get Fooled Again in 71. It was in the middle of the set.
Yeah.
And people were still getting used to it, you know.
All right. Well, we got to get to our three albums. But before we do, by popular demand, Who Died is making a comeback here in 1971.
Oh, yes!
This is a contest between the two of you. I'll say a word. You guys begin guessing. Person number one, Who Died in 1971. Fashion. Black dress.
Halston?
Perfume.
Estee Lauder.
No, a black dress.
Just
a little black dress. Oh, come on. Every woman has a black dress because of this woman.
Audrey Hepburn.
Coco Chanel.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
That was rough. Okay. Second person. I picked three this time, so there wouldn't be a tie.
I know, dude. And also,
and now there's gonna be a tie.
I criticized Jeff last week for not selling you, Timmy. That's about me. That's not you. That's me.
Okay.
Our job to sell you, baby.
That's right. All right. Musician. Orphan. New Orleans.
Louis Armstrong?
Thank you. Dear God. Yes. Louis Armstrong. Well,
there's
done.
One or two musicians from New Orleans. Like, I love
your orphans.
He's an orphan.
Yeah. All right. Last. So 1-0, Jeff. Golfer. Not a Philadelphia 76er.
Ben Hogan.
Sam Snead.
That's good. That's good old golfer.
That's good old golfer. Not a Philadelphia 76er. Doesn't that help?
Mike Jaminski?
He was a 76er.
So the G-man, was he also a golfer who died?
And this guy, so the golfer had the same name as the Philadelphia 76er, and I couldn't stand this guy.
Julius Erving?
Bobby Jones.
Bobby Jones. Okay.
Oh boy, do I cut the whole bit?
You turned up the heat on that one.
So, in other words, 1971 was not a year we have to really remember in terms of those dearly departed.
Oh my God! All right,
wasn't that painful in that way?
Let's go. Our three albums.
Our three albums.
All right. So Jeff and I had a negotiation. I kind of yoinked him last week. I jumped the line and made
sure
I got my pick last week. This week, I'm going to let Jeff do his thing. He's going to get the obvious record for this year.
All right.
And am I going to go first?
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Saskatchewan is beautiful this time of year, I'm told, though I've never been. Saskatoon in particular. And I bring this up because Saskatoon, Saskatchewan is fun to say. So I might say it at least one more time in this introduction, but it's also the middle of it. You know, it's not the epicenter of popular culture, which is why the rise of this artist is a kind of an interesting story. And this is a record that was universally praised since its release. And by the end of the decade was kind of considered pretty remarkably influential in the way people started to write songs and think about themselves as artists. But in the last 3 years, it has enjoyed a kind of stratospheric revisitation. And in fact, in the Rolling Stone top 500 records of all time list that was released this year, it is at number 3. And it's because it's enjoying its 50th anniversary. It's being re-released. It's being reconsidered. And so I'm interested to talk about this record with y'all today, because It's having its moment, maybe more so than ever in its history, including when it was initially popular. And the record is Joni Mitchell's Blue. This is not Joni Mitchell's first record. It is her fifth, I believe. Joni's recording career starts in 1963. She makes her first record in 66. There are very famous songs on Joni's records before Blue. Big Yellow Taxi, The Circle Game, Cactus Tree, The Conversation, The Priest. She writes the song Woodstock that becomes a big hit for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And she's certainly a known commodity. She's living in Laurel Canyon. She's having a relationship with each member of Crosby, Stills, and Nash one by one. Blue is a huge game changer for me. Like if Joni Mitchell's career had stopped with the record that came before this, Ladies of the Canyon, I think people would speak about her in the same way that Ben spoke of Carole King and Tapestry. Like, sure, kind of a remarkable voice, multi-octave, an interesting sounding record, pretty good guitar player. But I don't think she would now be in the pantheon of influential. Blue is a big shift in her career because she starts to write about herself in a confessional way that singer-songwriters were not doing yet, and especially female singer-songwriters. Like, there were deeply moving songs, obviously, written before 1971. But sometimes they were about the artist, but there was usually a degree of separation, right? The artist would use he or she to write about themselves, or they would write about themselves, but they would couch the details, right? Like Bob Dylan famously says, like, you should never take anything I write about myself. And anytime I use I, I'm Rambeau, like I is another, even if he was obviously writing about his wife, he was, and, you know, Dylan wrote Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands in 1966 about Sarah. By after Blue and after the singer-songwriter confessional movement that she ushers in takes place, by 1975, the song about Sarah that Bob Dylan writes is called Sarah, in which he says, remember when I stayed up all night at the Chelsea Hotel writing Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands for you, right? Joni Mitchell is the turning point of that knife edge. Blue is a record about love affairs. It's about people she knows. It is about the intimate details of those relationships. It is a diary come to life. That's not what makes it great. Blue is not a great record because Joni Mitchell is letting us in behind the curtain and telling us the sordid details of her personal life. It's a great record because she is a fantastic musician. First of all, she's one of the all-time great singers. Even if Joni Mitchell's voice is a little too twee and precious at times, and I think at Joni's, when she overindulges the sonic quality of her voice, I don't like it as much, but the woman can sing five different octaves. She's an amazing guitar player, not just a good one. Joni Mitchell uses alternate tunings better than just about anybody who's ever done it. Like if you try to play these songs, they won't sound right when you pick up an acoustic guitar. Like, well, I know these chords. They won't sound right because she's radically restrung or retuned the instrument. This Flight Tonight, which is one of my favorite songs on the record, takes the E string and tunes it down to low G, and then takes the A string and tunes it down to the G one octave above. And so the droning low G sound that you get is just a six-string acoustic guitar, but it's a six-string acoustic guitar just reconsidered as an instrument. I'll just play the first 2 seconds so you can hear it.
I understand that.
You can hear it's kind of buzzy and drony. Yeah. It's almost impossible to control the strings when they're down-tuned that loosely. That's such a cool sound. I remember spending like half an hour trying to figure out how to, you know, and I just pitch matched that low. And then as I'm moving my way up the guitar and it's not something that people were doing necessarily. Like drop D tuning was popular because of blues playing and slack key, but to each song having its own individual tuning on the acoustic guitar was a new thing. The other thing is she uses unusual instruments. There's dulcimer all over this record.
Yeah, Appalachia.
Which is my why people. There you go. And Greece as well. Greece would have like to have a word with you about the dulcimer. But
okay.
But you know, so she's using instruments that aren't traditionally rock and roll instruments and playing them like rock and roll instruments. I mean if she was plucking a dulcimer and it would sound like something that this podcast would almost surely make fun of. It would sound like a Sting lute record. But the fact that she takes a dulcimer and then strums it hard like a rock and roll guitar player takes those instruments and reclaims them. And just one beautiful song after another. The first song is my favorite. I'll play that a little bit of that one. But, Carrie is just a tremendous song. California, like those of us who live in California, like every kid I know born in California claims California as their for themselves as if no one else has ever done it. This Flight Tonight, River, A Case of You. You could make a case as being the best song on the record. It was Prince's all-time favorite song, and Prince actually does a remarkable cover of A Case of You, as do many other people. It's not a very long record, so it comes and goes. It's about 35 minutes, so it packs a wallop in its economy. It's in a remarkably sexist era of who gets to make records and who decides who makes records. Joni Mitchell finds a way to survive and thrive and make a record that is tremendously influential, like not just on female singer-songwriters, but as I said, on males. I don't think James Taylor's career exists without Blue. I don't think Paul Simon's solo career sustains itself the way it does without Blue. I don't think Dylan comes back and reinvents himself on Blood on the Tracks without Blue's influence. And Joni's career is really hit and miss. Like, Blue's not the beginning of a run of 10 fantastic records. In fact, she's on and off even after that. I don't find the next record, which is For the Roses, as nearly as compelling. I'm a big fan of Court and Spark, which comes in 1974. But then the records get longer and weirder. They become double records. There's 17-minute songs. She starts collaborating with jazz musicians. She makes a record with Charles Mingus right before he dies. She's a wandering spirit, and I admire the ambition and the effort, but the ambition and the natural talent and the songwriting skill and the arrangement and intensity of focus all comes together on this record for me. And here's the first minute of
Before you play it,
just
listen carefully to the guitar part.
Okay.
Yes.
The little weird rhythm and solo that she does, and how like it's a little bit discordant, and it's exactly for the reason Jeff said. It's a really unusual tuning, and her playing is just off the hook. This is my favorite one on it too.
Oh, good.
If you want to hear the difference between her and Carole King, or you want to hear the difference between her and Cat Stevens, I mean, the artist of this song and the sheer playing is just unbelievable.
Blue by Joni Mitchell.
Traveling, looking for something, what can it be? Oh, I hate you some, I hate you some, I love you some. Oh, I love you when I forget about me. I wanna be strong, I wanna live alone, I wanna belong to the living. Alive, alive, I wanna get up and drive, wanna wreck my stockings in some jukebox dive. Do you want, do you want, do you wanna dance with me, baby? Do you wanna take a chance on maybe finding some sweet romance with me, baby? Well, come on.
Those are some of the best opening lyrics to a record I've ever heard. You know, and I'll say this, like, I credit Blue for making me a better guy in the sense that, like, I am on a lonely road and I am traveling looking for something. What could it be? Like, I have tried to write and rewrite and rewrite that song unsuccessfully my entire life. And I have felt that way so often, especially when I was younger, especially when I, before I had a family, especially when I hadn't really figured out who I am. Right. And then that I hate you some, I love you some, like how many early relationships were you in that's the tombstone? And then it becomes a feminized version of that. Do you want to dance with me, baby? I'm going to wreck my stockings and some jukebox dive. I think this song in some ways like unmasculinized that, like, I'm the lonely road traveler who's complex and complicated and things I hate and love. It takes that and it reminds the 15-year-old boy who heard it, like, it's not only men who feel that way. Like, women are not just a conduit for your search for identity. They are their own people who have their own search for identity that's going on. And I think that's, I just find that that's the one of the most powerful things about Blue is it's a record by a woman that details the internal struggles that men are feeling.
And we just didn't
and reminds reminds everyone that they are not male struggles, they are human struggles. And that's what Cat Stevens is lacking for me is that universality. And it's a little bit what Carole King's songs are lacking.
Why does this have to be an attack on Cat Stevens?
Because I find Cat Stevens particularly masculine. I'm still mad about like those songs. Like that's not, it's father to son, right? And they are, and I don't feel, I feel like Joni Mitchell is writing about herself, but she's also trying to figure out the guy who's making her feel the way she's feeling. It's a really generous investigation of the self because while she is looking inward, she's looking outward at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just all of the songs on the record have that duality. Like they are deeply revealing, and at the same time they forgive herself for her own mistakes, at the same time forgiving the people who made the mistakes that caused her to feel the way that she does. So great record, Ben. Thanks for letting me have it.
I would have chosen this one. This was an easy mark it down in pen the first time I wrote the list. I absolutely positively love this record. I'll echo some of the things Jeff said. First, like that feminist piece to it, it's a super au courant, like second wave, third wave feminist album. You know what I mean? Like it's got a search for love, but it's very sexual too. Like it's got a whole vibe to it that is still being played out.
Yep.
It is one of the most influential records of the 70s, if not the most. Like all of my favorite female singer-songwriters of the last decade and last decades are still playing out this exact field. Like there's so much room here. It's so expansive, the space that she creates, that we're still filling it in. Interesting work is still coming out of this genre that she basically creates. And it was like super influential in the time. Like it's funny, Zeppelin 4 and Zeppelin 3 are explicit Joni Mitchell records. Paige loved Joni Mitchell, loved her playing, and Zeppelin 3 in particular is an attempt to just like recreate that sound. It's amazing how good her guitar work is and how pretty the songs are.
And the point, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll just say, no, you go.
I was just saying to the point that like when she tours in the 1970s, she has the best band on earth. Like it's the basically Weather Report with Joni Mitchell in front of it. Jaco Pastorius on bass, like the absolute very best players on earth. And you can't, and she's the star. Like,
backing her. They are backing her.
That's how talented she is. What a star she is. Like, you know, any one of those guys in the band is arguably the best player at his instrument in that moment. And they just can't steal the spotlight from her. It's remarkable.
I would say I like the guitar songs a lot better than the piano songs. And part of that is because I'm a guitar person, But the piano songs are just so much more ballady and less interesting to me than the guitar songs. Because the guitar ones tend to be more up-tempo and just generally her guitar, she's an excellent piano player and a great songwriter, but she's an out of this world acoustic guitar.
Yeah, and she can't, you can't untune a piano. I mean, it really is interesting. Like the thing that's so remarkable about her is she took an instrument that people had played for 600 years and completely reimagined it. And you can't do that with an acoustic piano. Like you're just locked into the way it's set up. Yeah. And I think that's why the piano songs don't shine in the same way, because they're not groundbreaking sonically in the way that the other songs are. I mean, you hear All I Want and then you go into My Old Man and like, I agree with you, Ben, like the first time I heard the record, I was like, ooh, it's a come down, like to come away from this thing that sounds like nothing else. Yeah.
The last thing I'll add is she's a great storyteller. She's a great songwriter. She is fucking hilarious. This has got some of the funniest lyrics of any folk record, period. I think the second verse of All I Want, where she's like, I want to shampoo ya, I want to tattoo ya. I'm like, yeah. What is happening here?
I want to tattoo ya, I want to shampoo ya.
It starts on that like life mission statement that Jeff described, which I agree is just couldn't be more perfect. But uh-huh. In the middle, she's so goofy and weird. And California is packed with that. She's like,
yeah,
Greece. Like I stole my camera and now I miss California.
Yeah.
Freaking hilarious.
I'll even kiss a sunset pig. Right.
Yeah, no, totally.
Awesome. All right, Ben, what do you got?
All righty then. Now this is recorded in 1971, not released until I think 92. I'll just be right up front about it. This is the James Brown Love, Power, Peace. Paris, 1971. This is with the original JBs. This is, and most of this group goes on to be Parliament Funkadelic. This is the greatest collection of funk talent ever to be seen on one stage, in my opinion. The show is off the hook great.
Uh-huh.
The band is hilarious. So it's James Brown, and then Bobby Byrd is the holdover from the last band. And basically during this period, you know, I've praised James Brown's artistry and I do it. Love the guy, but he's just a high riding prick. Like he has one band after another quit, leave. He's not paying them. Like there's all these weird disputes and he's like, oh, James Brown. He just gets a whole new band. Like he's just not. So Bobby Byrd's the band leader, and he basically puts this band together for him. There's a heavy food theme amongst them. You got Clayton Chicken Gunnels on trumpet. You got Phelps Catfish Collins on lead guitar. Harlan Cheese Martin. You got cheese and catfish together on the two guitar parts. Lucy Collins. They record all of that great, great, great material. They record Sex Machine. All of the big James Brown hits from 70 and 71 are this band. This is the only good recording of them. They recorded enough. They were going to put out a 3-album live set of it. Band leaves to become Parliament Funkadelic, and James Brown holds this material despite them. He won't put the record out in 70.
Wow.
It doesn't come out until 92 by the time he's basically in receivership and people are just telling him what to do. So the record sits in the can, held with nobody hearing it for all those years because James Brown wants to spite the guys who leave for P-Funk. James Brown live at the Apollo is arguably the greatest live record of all time by acclamation. I prefer this to that because I prefer the material. But it's funny, you know, I chose two James Brown songs for doing songs. I love James Brown, but it's hard to find an album. And the reason why is he's so sloppy in the studio. He's 69 or 70, he comes out with Sex Machine, which is a double album. And I was like, oh, maybe I should choose that. I went back and listened to it. It's so freaking weird. There's like a part that's theoretically a concert that's not a concert. There's a part that's theoretically in the studio that is a concert. It's just a freaking mess. I mean, it's got a half dozen amazing songs on it, but I couldn't choose it as album of the year. As a live act and in collection, this is why Live at the Apollo is his best-selling record of all time, is because he never puts out good albums. In the studio, he's just like jamming it all together. Like seriously, my favorite, the most cohesive James Brown studio album is probably his Christmas album, which I strongly recommend you buy and listen to James Brown's Christmas album, because it is the world's funniest thing. Career packed with cash grabs. It's a particularly hideous cash grab. It's like James Brown Christmas. He's like, James Brown loves you. Buy James Brown records. Why aren't you buying more James Brown records? That's the end of the James Brown Christmas album. It's amazing. Anyhow, he's on tour with this group. They play in Paris, and it's an off-the-hook set. It's a review that goes all the way back to Try Me, like some of his hits from the early 60s, all the way right up to Brother Rap with Soul Power, Get Up, Get Into It, Get Involved, Super Bad, Sex Machine, along with It's a Man's Man World, Give It Up or Turn It Loose. Like, it's actually, when you listen to it, it's like a history of African-American music from the 50s to the early 70s, like in a time capsule. It's crazy. It's a cover of Georgia On My Mind. And he's got the full-on soul crooner with the horns in the background, all the way to the extra modern funk. And live, everything is time and a half. Like the funk songs are so fast, it sounds like a speed punk show. Like, you're just like, what is happening? Why are you going so fast? It is awesome. I'm gonna highlight last and most importantly, Bootsy Collins is the most famous member of his family. His brother, Catfish Collins, can freaking play. That James Brown guitar sound from the early 70s is 1,000% this guy. And when you hear him live, you'll know what I'm talking about. And the guitar parts in these funk songs, like basically because it's funk and the way we've digested it since, you experience it as a bass, drums, horns sound.
Yeah.
It's a guitar sound. It is a 100% guitar sound. The guitar... Huh. All of the interesting stuff, not to be mean to the bass, but the guitar plays off of the bass. The guitar fills in the weird things. The repetitive melody that comes with the song that gets stuck in your head is all the guitar. And it's this guy. It's Catfish Collins. He's so freaking amazing and good. Just listen to his playing. Jeff, I'm going to ask you to just play the first minute of Ain't It Funky Now.
Love, Power, and Peace. Live at the Olympia, Paris, 1971, by James Brown.
Solo, I mean, freaking flies. But second, like, this is, and it's completely all over this record, and it's all over those singles. He's so fast, but the solo is also the rhythm. He's like doing the whole thing. He slips in and out of the rhythm part with the solo on top of it. It's amazing. That's first. Second, that's the whole song. It's just James Brown screaming, "Ain't it funky now?"
Yeah,
solo after another. Yeah. Highlighting each member of the band. It goes from guitar to trombone to trumpet to sax. There's a long keyboard solo, which I can even stand with Bobby Bird's playing. This is what I meant by it's like a soul review. This is a callback to the big bands of the 40s. This James Brown saw when he was a kid, in that everybody gets 12 bars to 24 bars. He's like, guitarist, take a solo. Bassist, take a solo. Organist, take a solo. And they go through the acts. And then you also just have to picture in your mind, this is one of those ones where It's a shame we don't have the video.
Oh.
Because while this is occurring, James Brown is freaking out. The extant film from this time is just James Brown doing splits, James Brown dancing. When he's circling back to the mic, into funky now, and then he takes off and he's like, you guys freaking out, that it comes back through, into funky now, into funky now, on the loop through it, while he's just dancing himself sick.
They're doing all the playing, and he's taking all the money. And he's like, yes, thank you.
The last song, the Get Up, Get Into It, Get Involved, they end, and they let you hear the crowd sound, and they're just chanting James Brown with the French accent. Like, yeah. James Brown, James Brown, James Brown. They cannot freaking believe what they have just seen. The amount of sweat these guys poured onto the thing and just the sheer artistry of it. I can't say enough about it. If you like James Brown at all and you haven't heard this show, probably start. There's an original edited version that's just a single CD, seven songs. But they've released the entire show, and it's worth listening to the entire show. Like, you just can't believe. And I guess, how long is the show, Jeff? 3 hours?
It's actually only about 2 hours of music, because on the record they cut out like all of the like, I can't go on, I can't go on, and like the seven or eight encores. But yeah, I have the whole thing. And actually, what's funny about the whole thing is it's not tracked. It's just side one, side two, side three, side four. Like, I don't know, there was some kind of deal they worked with to keep the CD version different, but it's great that way. Like, why would you want to skip around? Like, you just experience it as if you're in the hall.
And all the talking, the band, James Brown talking, the intro, the minute long intro. Like, I wish that I had this intro with me to introduce me in every room. Like, and to be like, ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba, and the horns just keep going up, ramping up, and the guy's like, let the brother rap, let the brother rap, Mr. James Brown. Then he comes out, it's the best.
It's great. This is a great example of why people like us provide a valuable service, because this is a lost record. And the only reason we have it, this is in 1991, they release a box set of James Brown called Star Time. And it's the game changer. It actually reclaims James Brown for a whole new generation of listeners.
And it's great. It's great.
As Ben points out, like, Brown's discography is a mess. There really isn't a great greatest hits record yet. Like, there are hit and miss and scattershot, but this is the moment when everyone's getting, anybody worthwhile is getting a four CD box set. And James Brown's is phenomenal. And the way you sell these box sets is like, it's 80% the famous tracks and 20% stuff you've never heard. And Ain't It Funky Now is on the Star Time box set. And I mean, Ben, I'm sure you were the same thing. Like, I bought that box set, and I'm hearing these James Brown songs for the first time, like, well mastered in chronological order. His career is starting to make sense, and I've listened through like all the 50s stuff, all the 60s stuff, the live tracks. It's the kind of syrupy strings of the late 60s, and I hit this track, and I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Like, Ain't It Funky Now jumps off that box set. Like, it's better than Sex Machine. I know it's sacrosanct to say that, but it's so exciting. And because the box set was such an enormous hit, they release this concert the next year as if you liked Ain't It Funky Now, maybe you'd like to hear the whole thing. But like, we don't get this record ever or at all without an archivist, in this case, I believe Bill Levinson, like, trolling through all of Brown's material, including the discarded stuff, looking for nuggets. And now that's just like, you know, we're so used to like 50th anniversary with 74 alternate versions, but like, we didn't get any of that stuff until the late 80s. And I would argue that Star Time's the most important box set for an artist, like an individual single artist. There are some singles collection, like the Motown singles collection or Stax Fold, that are pretty important, but like, for a box set that like saved an artist from being a joke and reminding us what a spectacular, because like the last time James Brown had America's attention was Living in America, when he's singing in Rocky III, which is at his best.
Living with a hernia.
Across the nation, right? And Star Time reminds us what a genius he is. And this concert in particular is an example of why it's important not to move too quickly through an artist's career and just assume that the stuff they threw away was bad. Wow. Great pick. Great choice.
Awesome. Awesome. I just downloaded it for my drive today, leaving Somerville. I will be jamming to James
Be careful.
Brown
you will get
Paris.
A speeding ticket if you're not careful. Drive 110 miles an hour to this record.
All right. Well, my album, I'm still wounded by the reception of my first two picks. So I've got a pick, and I was talking to my family last night, and they were upset about my pick. And I'll tell you why. It kind of dovetails off of your two picks. Here is the flip side of Joni Mitchell's journey, is the young cad wandering the world, wooing women and then writing songs about it. This is Rod Stewart's Every Picture Tells a Story. And I'm also...
Timmy, you're back, baby. This is gold.
Oh, is it? Okay, good, good, good. But my family was like, because I brought up the line in the title song about the slit-eyed lady.
Dude, why did you lead with that?
My doing? What are you doing?
My family was horrified that this was going to be my pick. But Ben Barton, you've said time and again that James Brown wasn't a great guy.
Oh, he's an extra bad guy.
And yet we can separate the art from his actions. And my wife's like, no, but that line is the art. I was like, shh. Well, let's, which song would you guys want to play? Because there's so many good ones.
I would do Seems Like an Old, Seems Like a Long Time. And I can't believe you didn't choose that for your family. That's where you start.
All right,
you can't
go ahead.
You can't start with, I don't even want to say it, the racist slur.
The racist slur.
Like, hold on, I'm going to pull out the racist slur. Do you like
what it? What is it with British guys in Asia in the 19th? All right, anyways, go ahead, Jeff Simons. Hit it.
You want Seems Like a Long Time? I'll play a minute of a different one, but Ben's right, this song kicks. This is a great record.
Every Picture Tells a Story by Rod Stewart.
It's a great record. Jeff, what would you play if you had one song to play?
This one. Here comes the bass. You ready? Fuzzbox bass. James Brown guitar, and then
yes,
your love is fading. I can feel your love fading. Why, but it's from
the drums.
Away from me, cause your personal touch is
piano. Yeah, I might have listened to this record a couple hundred times.
And just real quick, give me the first 10 seconds of Maggie May, because I'm the radio guy.
You didn't know this was the first 10 seconds.
Oh, it is, because I'm the radio guy.
That's right.
All right, skip the first. Skip
oh,
the.
Oh, no, no, no.
He's got a minstrel in tights running around with him.
Hilarious, and it starts this way.
I don't even mind this. This record's so good.
Mm-hmm.
think I just remember being in my calculus class freshman year of college, dying from the math, didn't understand anything, and so I just started writing out all the lyrics to Maggie May because the girl sitting next to me was named Maggie. And I had the whole song down. Wake up, Maggie.
Tim is on a lonely road and he is traveling.
I was on a lonely road at the University of Dayton.
I love this record. It's a shame. I actually, that the slur which you've led with
awful.
I actually didn't know the lyrics to that song. Like, I'm not a guy who pays attention to lyrics for the first 30. So I loved the sound of that song and loved it as a song for years. And then one day I actually paid attention. I was like, he did not just say what I thought. And then I was embarrassed that I had been listening to it like la 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 without knowing. But it's a terrific sounding record. Is there any other artist, Ben, besides Phil Collins, who was a gargantuan solo star simultaneously to being a member of a gargantuan hit band? Because Rod Stewart is making a Rod Stewart record and a Faces record every 4 months from 1970 to 1975.
And he makes like 14 records. Drinking a bottle of brandy a day.
But I can't think of a guy who pulls it off at the same, like Phil Collins is making.
I mean, Peter Gabriel too, right?
No, but Gabriel quits Genesis.
He quits and leaves.
But like No Jacket Required and Hello, I Must Be Going are like flip-flopped in between Abacab and the Genesis record and Invisible Touch. Like they're happening all at the same time. And the same thing here, like, and if, there's a lot of the Faces guys on these solo records as well. Like it's just kind of a bizarre thing.
On this record is Ron Wood, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
You like this bass record?
Love it. Love
it's amazing. Don't you think he's super, freaking great?
Yeah, super influential to me. Like one of the records I used to learn how to play. Like just fantastic.
Oh, cool.
But am I right about this? I mean, to my ear, he plays bass like a guitarist.
Oh, totally.
He's really out front. He's like kind of stepping on other instruments in a likable way. Like that's one of the reasons why I love Seems Like a Long Time. Like the piano comes in, all of a sudden you're like, boo-doop, boo-doop.
Yeah, no, he's just like totally, he's not having it.
Wait, did the bassist just like step on top of the piano and he's like banging it right in the pianist's face?
Totally. You have to be a really good player to pull that off. But when you do, it's better than just going boom, 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 you know, like totally.
I believe they recorded it in 10 days.
It sounds about right. It's pretty sloppy. I mean, it's one of the things that's likable about it. Like,
it's sloppy in a great way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So good stuff.
And Rod Stewart, I mean, he hit some low lows later.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Era is so just peak after peak after peak. His voice, I mean, damn. Like,
so good.
And that's a voice that's, you know, I read an article about this. Like, it's legit. Like, he lost his voice all the time. Like, it's not a convention, that throaty, like, the guy's voice is on the edge of collapse through his whole career. What is the worst Rod Stewart hit single?
Downtown Train.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Just because it murders a song that's actually good? That's not fun, in my opinion. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be one of the disco ones.
Yeah, is it?
If You Want My Body?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I was going to say Young Hearts.
Oh, that's a great one. That also sucks.
Or Passion. I'm going to go with Passion. Do you remember that one?
Oh, Passion's terrible. Oh, God.
Wait, hold on. So before we do that, let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
Rod Stewart gets his start in the Jeff Beck group.
Yep.
Yes.
If you like Rod Stewart and you haven't heard Jeff Beck Truth, absolutely positively. I think that, is that a 69 record? That was on
68.
The Jeff Beck Truth is like one of my all-time favorite records. It's a spectacular guitar record. It's on a par sonically with Zeppelin 1. Like, it's a tremendous, tremendous album.
The next one's good too. Beck Ola is underrated. Beck Ola's got good stuff on it too, man.
This is how much of a prick and idiot Jeff Beck is. He runs Rod Stewart off from Beck group. He could have just called themselves the Faces.
Yeah.
He could have been the guitarist and Rod Stewart singer and Jeff Beck could have been Led Zeppelin. Like, they literally could have had a career. Instead, he's like, who needs Rod Stewart? Did you the Jeff Beck group? And Rod Stewart's like, well, that's weird. I'm gone. And he's like, fine. Good luck with that, Jeff Beck.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All although right. Rod Stewart was so shy on the first Jeff Beck tour that he had to sing with his back to the audience.
No.
He was so nervous and freaked out on the first tour, like, that he couldn't face the audience for the first half an hour of the show. So
it's like Andy Partridge.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, we are not here for the slur. The family wanted me to make sure that was incredibly clear. Can't believe he put that in. Don't know why.
Girl, like, there's 1,000 songs about that exact topic. That's not. I mean, there's a bunch of weird racist Rolling Stones songs about African Americans. I mean, what are you going to do? That's
true. We could talk about that too. All right, we'll talk about that. Maybe next week we'll do our top three unfortunate lyrics of all time.
Oh boy, no, thank you, Timmy. I'm not going to cancel the stupid yeah. podcast.
Jeez. All right,
grand opening, grand closing.
Hey, safe travels, y'all.
By the way, Timmy, great selection. Back in the saddle.
You're right. Yeah, welcome back. I'm gonna put Passion on in the background for outro music while we say goodbye to each other. So,
all right, that's great.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's it.
That's what the song is.
Cheese, baby.
Cheese.
Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a shout, and then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the rock podcast Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interview.
Electric Acid.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Electricast. Electricast.